4LEO mobile.
N0TR stationary.
How are you this afternoon?
I'd say Viner and Frog here split three ways, but I'd be lying. My eyes are still dilated from going to the eye doctors, I should say, because they're drugged up. I don't like it when they do that, but what can I say?
So it always takes a while for that stuff to wear off.
Now, Bernice, my wife, hers are like pins, and it takes them two, three, four times putting them drops in to get them to dilate. Well, not mine. I didn't feel particularly good about driving home. So next time I think I'll take the War Department with me. It's not anything bad, but I think you'd want to inhibit it. You got a Roger beep in there at the beginning of your transmission.
You know, I'll have to go in and take a look and see what that is. I'm not sure how to get rid of it.
Sue radio? A little bit short.
Yes, it's a Yesu.
Guys on here that can tell you immediately how to remedy that. And it's not hurting anything, but I'm sure you don't want it on there. But it's a common thing, and it's in your menu, and it goes beep, and then your transmission starts to come through. And one of those things. Well, I had my limbs, I had laser surgery last year, and the sac that the lens goes in sometimes get a little foggy after laser surgery, and they got to go in and touch it up. So I didn't know that, but this morning when they looked at my optic nerve, well, they discovered that. And so he immediately remedied that in the right eye, and then I got to go back in about a month and get the left eye done.
Did you finally get your second shot?
That's 12, but they're having trouble with the trucks and the delivery due to all of this crummy weather up north. I checked in. I don't usually check in on nets, but I did check in the Western Kansas net last night. And it's a lot of farmers up there, but some of the guys I do know. And lo and behold, one farmer said, you know, it was 34 below day before yesterday, but it only got to 12 below today, so we're doing better.
When I was in Wichita, you know, in the tankers, we had a radar system. It was a ground mapping radar. But that thing was known for opening up garage doors. And I drove home down Oliver Boulevard one day, and I noticed there was a bunch of water coming down the street. And I was trying to figure out, well, where in the world is all that coming up? Because it was below freezing outside. Well, son of a gun, when I pulled into my driveway, it was my garage door that had gotten opened. And the pipes froze in the ceiling in the garage and burst and was just leaking water like crazy.
That was one of those Maalox moments, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I had water coming out of the ceiling and down the sidewall where the electrical box was, and it corroded all that stuff out. I was wondering if it had caught a fire, but it was quite a mess. I think I was a young lieutenant at the time. I was trying to figure out, how in the world am I going to fix this?
Well, you know, back home, there was this little stucco house across from us that it was always a mess, and they always rented it to the poorest of the poor. But every year, the water pipes would freeze up in that sucker. And like you say, the water would be coming out and running down the street. Well, one day, Bernice came to me, and she says, Tom, she said, there's water running down the front window of that house over there, and I think it's in the kitchen. And I said, oh, you're crazy. And I went up and I looked. Well, these brilliant people over there, now this is Kansas. You know how it is up there. They got the bright idea of taking the pipes out from underneath the house, which had hardly any crawl space, and they put them in the attic. And guess what happened?
Well, it certainly got pretty cold in Kansas in the wintertime. And I can remember I'd go on alert, and we were on for 7 days, and then we'd get off and have 3 days off. Many a time I had to go out and during the middle of the winter there and clean snow off of airplane wings.
No fun at all. That's a lot of wing on that thing. Well, I'll tell you, that I can understand them opening garage doors at times. I know in the P3 at that time, and we didn't have these electronic scanning radars. We had one in the nose and one in the tail, and they were synchronized with what they call a drab box, and they give you a 360-degree span, of course. And it was 143 kilowatts.
Oh, that's a lot of juice coming out of that thing.
Remember ever seeing an old P2 Victor or the Willie Victors, the super constellations like they used to have down at Jacksonville, hurricane chasers and that, and they had a belly radar in them that was a big, huge dome coming down, and the P2 did also, and those were 1 megawatt, Jim.
Well, ours were, you know, because the airplane was originally built in the 1950s. In fact, I think the first squadron out at Castle was in 57, and they were a training squadron. But it was all tube technology. In fact, even when we first got in the airplane, the autopilot was all tube technology. And finally, the Air Force couldn't get contractors to build the tubes for them anymore, and they had to go put in a digital autopilot. But the radar that we had was made for ground mapping. I mean, it wasn't that, and you know, you could look at thunderstorms and that kind of stuff, but mostly it was for navigational purposes. We didn't use it for anything else, hardly.
Long way with these phased array things. They just stand still, but they electronically scan. Now, ours had a 240-mile range on it, and it was a pretty good one, but I didn't work on them. I was an appliance operator, you might say. I ran a lot of different sensors, and the ATs actually did that kind of work. But I wouldn't be surprised there's a lot of those miniature tubes in it. Excuse me. They had a lot of stuff behind the panels. It was discrete components and transistorized and all that, of course. But I can't really answer that because the most we ever did in flight was to, like, change a magnetron or something like that. You didn't carry many repair parts. And the one on the S2 that I was in was 80 kilowatts, and it didn't have that much range, but I had a toggle switch, and I would lower the radome and extend the mad boom out the back, and I think it was about 18 feet long. And you didn't want to come back to the carrier with that radome down or that mad boom out.
Nothing more dangerous in the flying business than a pilot with a screwdriver.
You know, there's a theory that you know how you can fly and be 100% safe, Jim?
I haven't heard that one.
Don't fly.
They used to brief at the beginning of all our mission briefs, especially when we had Mito takeoffs and, you know, minimum interval takeoffs and cell formation. You know, it'd be a big group of guys in there, and whoever the flight lead or cell lead was, you know, they'd always brief safety's paramount, but it really wasn't. You know, it was doing the mission was first, and then you tried to be as safe as you could be with it.
I remember the first time I went on a check ride with and it was checking out the pilots up front, you know. And we got down to, I think they called it V1, and then you rotate. And That old boy reached up, and there was four levers up there that were yellow with black bars across them. And he feathered engine number three, I believe. Anyway, he reached up and just pulled that. He hit the red button. There was four regular feather ones, and then there was four that had yellow on them with black across them. I think that shot the fire bottles in there, too. So he reached up and feathered that engine as we were really hauling it down the down the runway, and they had to get stopped. And boy, they did everything like robots. I mean, those pilots were the best in the world, and that's a compliment. And but the only thing, the guy that they were checking out, he forgot to depressurize the plane, and we were supposed to go out in the emergency exit and slide down the wing. And you know how that works.
That's egress out of an airplane is one of the places where a lot of folks can get hurt in a real hurry.
Depressurize it. The crew was all dead, and that was the official ruling on that one.
But did he get a bust for that one?
In my pay grade, that was officers, so I really don't know. But it wasn't a good mark, I'm sure of that.
When I trained students, we did all that in the simulator, and you could do all the dangerous stuff there, and then only what you had to do on the runway. So we didn't have a B1. We had an S1, which was a decision speed, and then we would do a engine. We wouldn't cut the engine off. We just pull the throttle back after the decision speed, so the pilot was committed to making a takeoff three engine.
Yeah, those old boys were, they were like robots up there. They really done a fine job, and always felt safe with that. Sometimes when you were down low and pulling G's around the water, it made you feel a little bit like, oh, I hope you don't hit that crap.
Well, yeah, the only time I did that kind of stuff was when I was in pilot training. You know, we did that, but even then, we stopped doing the low altitude stuff. First day I reported to pilot training, I passed an ambulance going in the front gate, going out to pick up one of our, I was brand new, so it wasn't anybody that was in my class, but young lady had inadvertently lost control of an airplane and crashed in a low altitude area, and low altitude was 5,000 feet back then.
Yeah, that's bad. Well, our weapon systems trainers, they call them WSTs, were in that large hangar next to Ames Research Center out there that was 200 feet tall. It was a blimp hangar in the old days. And when we went in for training like that, the pilot, tactical coordinator, flight engineer, and that were all in one. They were like semi-truck beds, and they were in one, and we were connected together electronically, of course, but all the sensor operators were in an entirely different truck bed, I called them. That's what they looked like. They were blue, and it said WST on the side. I remember that.
We had WSTs, and we had a more modern version of that later, but are you talking about NAS Moffitt? Is that where you were?
The NAS Moffitt, I assume that the three big blimp hangers are still there, but the oldest one was over on the left of the runway and next to the wind tunnel.
Yeah, I've been in that building, and NASA, we'd gone out there to visit some folks at NASA that were doing some advanced flight research and at Moffitt, and was with a bunch of Air Force guys, a bunch of Canadian pilots as well, and we all went in to look at some of the stuff NASA was working on back then. This would have been, 89, somewhere around in there.
A long ways with those flight simulators, though. Steve, my nephew that flies 787s, he sent me a picture of the simulators for the 787 down there. He was standing out in front of them. And, where was that at? In Texas, I think. And for American Airlines. wow, there's something else. They really are. They've come a long ways. And I said, well, how accurate are they, Steve? He said, they're just as accurate as if you were sitting in that airplane and flying into the same airport that they showed there, in every respect, in every feel of the yoke and all, feels just like you're in the airplane.
I got a lot of time in simulators. If I only had an hour for, or a dollar for every hour I'd been in there, I'd have been pretty rich. I'd make a lot of extra money when I was a young guy. But we had the first simulators we got for the new re-engined tanker came out of Boeing, so we used to go over and do our simulator missions and simulator check rides at Boeing, and that was pretty cool. But, you know, the whole platform came up on big old hydraulic jacks, and it had full wraparound vision, and you could go places like fly into Hong Kong or go fly into San Francisco International. It was all simulated with lights at night. It was just awesome.
I never got to go to the cockpit except one time when we were landing in the P3, but in the S2 I could see out the front. But you guys were blessed. You had the best spot in the world up there.
It was awesome to be able to do it, and but you sure did have to work at it pretty hard, because Uncle Sam really did expect you to have your stuff together and be ready to handle emergencies and that kind of stuff.
Up until recently, I know they were allowing commercial flights to fly over Russia now, and for quite a few years, and in the Great Circle route up there, and that's where Steve goes out of Dallas, and he'll fly directly to South Korea or wherever destination over in that area that he goes, China, all of them, and that's pretty amazing. They'll let him go over Russian territory.
I mean, you know, with that's when they had the KAL 007 shoot down. Those early days, some of those guys were flying, and they probably plugged in some wrong coordinates in their route of flight, which caused them to have some issues. But, yeah, the polar routes, that whole global track system is pretty awesome. And there are some guys who, because of the radiation effects of flying high altitude over the North Pole area, those guys wear sunscreen in the cockpits.
They get a lot of UV over there. Do you remember when they shot down that RC-135, and I believe it was over Sakhalin?
I don't remember that one. I just remember the KAL 007 one. I don't recall an RC going down.
Be positive on that, Jim. They were real sensitive about, and I'm sure it was Sakhalin Island, isn't it, that's off of, kind of off the coast of China out there. It's Russian Hills. I haven't been doing enough DX lately to remember all that. I got cards from there, actually. But they shot down one of our Air Force planes over there.
The only one I remembered was the one when the Chinese went after one of our Navy aircraft, I believe it was, Navy reconnaissance aircraft, and knocked the nose cone off the airplane, and then they had to make an emergency landing on a Chinese base, but I don't remember a shootdown.
Sakhalin Island, the one that's in dispute with Japan, KN4 VWA.
No, that's Spratly, Steve. We even had some ham operators go out there and get shot at. No, I'll have to look at that. And I remember the KAL. Yeah, I don't know how those guys got that messed up out of whack, unless they were using inertial and they got the gyros got off or something. I don't understand that. That was just pilot error there. And, yeah, we're not very proud of what happened to that EP3. That guy had ships in the area. He had, every one of us had a parachute in there, in those planes. And they could have bailed out and been rescued there. He could have ditched in the ocean and been rescued there. Instead, he lands on a Chicom island. Now, the press made him out a hero, but you and I know his military career was over, Jim. Go ahead.
I think the Navy finally got all that airplane back in pieces from the Chinese, and the Navy rebuilt that airplane.
But
that whole area over there is just dangerous, dangerous territory, dangerous turf. Half of those people don't even know which way they are going and when they are supposed to be where. And you wouldn't catch me over there at all in any way, shape, or form. Well, I got to go on to Ingalls. I just want to say, hey, you guys, carry on. KN4BWA clear.
See you later. Well, Jim, I'll tell you. That was uncalled for. I think that guy was doing rolls over the top of his aircraft, and I think one of those turboprops sucked him in. And so there was damage to one engine, at least. But that plane could easily fly on three because we feathered one when we went out to work a submarine in order to conserve fuel. You'd shut one down, turn it into the wind, and then unturn it into the wind, unfeather it, let it spin for a little while, it warmed up the oil, and then you'd refire it up and come back to, I always call it San Francisco, but it was Moffett. And he could easily have flown on that. And there's just no reason to put something like that down. That was our most modern technology. That was like the Pueblo incident. And he should have scuttled that aircraft, as far as I'm concerned. And like I said, his Navy career was over.
I think they actually knocked the nose cone of the airplane off, which means all their airspeed and all their instruments and all that stuff was totally messed up, you know. So I think, I don't know what happened to the air crew after that, but it sure was not a good thing for the U.S.
I hadn't heard that it knocked the nose cone off. I'm sure they tried to scuttle the equipment in the back. I've never so much as stuck my head into an EP-3. I was just on the P-3As and Bs. But from what the guys told us, that was strictly ELINT stuff, and it was bad. I remember when the Pueblo was captured, all the code books changed the very next day.
That was a little bit before my time. I was the group of guys that came on in the 80s and, went through 2000. But, they got to be careful with all that stuff.
I don't remember it distinctly. I just know I talked to different radio operators, and their crypto books changed immediately, which I think those change daily anyways. But it was a sad time, I'm sure. And that crew went through the heck over there, and I'm sure the crew of that EP-3 did too. But I hadn't realized they'd lost navigational stuff up there. If it took the nose cone off, that's a different situation. They didn't make that clear in the news, but you guys probably heard a lot more than I ever heard. But that's quite an airplane now. Now they got the P-8 Poseidons, and they're harassing those guys when they fly through over there around the Spratly Islands and that. And they're man-made Chinese islands. They'll send up planes and do things that are amazingly unsafe. You know, you've seen the pictures of the bear bombers and the F-4s flying escort to them and the F-15s and whatever. But we keep our distance when you're out in international airspace.
The last year of SAC, Strategic Air Command, every year SAC had a bomb nav competition, and air crews from all the SAC bases would compete. And the last bomb comp was held at Barksdale Air Force Base, and they invited the Russians to come to it.
That sounds unusual. those bear bombers are fascinating me. They had counter-rotating props and big, huge engines. I've seen pictures that show the operators in those little portholes looking out the side, waving over at the other guys. They get so close.
I think I stepped on you there. Go ahead, KO4 LAO.
I'd seen pictures of the Russians looking out the side windows, and that they had like blisters on the side of them and on those bears. Those were big, and then they come out with the newer ones, the bison and something else. I don't know. You used to have to know all those and have to know all their radar signatures too. But yeah, they always do that every year. They fly down along Alaska and that, and all the alert people run out and fly formation with them.
It's they landed at Barksdale and spent about 2 weeks there, and it was always funny. They'd go through the base exchange and buy just about anything, you know, microwaves and bubble gum and all kinds of stuff. You know, they wouldn't buy a couple pieces, they'd buy a whole box. And they stuffed that airplane so full, we weren't sure they were going to make it off the end of the runway when they left.
I'm not surprised. We're a very, very lucky country. You know, that, they must have given the codes to get through the AWOS, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they probably had an escort all the way up till they got to the base. But those counter-rotating props on the Tu-54, they're unique and distinct, and you'll definitely know that they're in the area if you ever hear them. But they parked on the ramp, and I had escort privileges, so I took my kids out on the ramp. So I got a picture of my kids standing in front of a nose cone or the nose gear of a Tu-54. It's pretty cool.
Amazing. Well, I just got a text here and said Rush Limbaugh died. I never did listen to him much, but a lot of people did. Yeah, that'd be quite a picture to have, I'll tell you. The nearest I've been to any Russian aircraft was in Oshkosh, and they had MiG-15s that did demonstrations there, and I think MiG-17s. There for a while, you could go over there and take a ride in one, probably still can, in a MiG-21 or a 23, I think, and then you could also buy one.
Yeah, you got to have some serious coins in order to be able to fly one of those things. I think they weren't exactly lean operating aircraft. They burn a lot of fuel.
You know, one of the things I've kind of had on my bucket list and I've never done, there's a guy down here that has a Stearman, and you can go down to the Greenville Airport and you can actually go for a ride in it, but it's $400 a pop. And I just don't know if it's worth that much.
When we were living in Wichita, my wife worked for Beach Aircraft Company, and so they had an open house one day, and we went into the headquarters building there, and there was Olive Ann Beach herself. We were sitting at the desk and wearing her big pearls that she was famous for. But yeah, you're right about the airplane. I've done that, and there's the guys up in Hendersonville, I think, that does it. Dennis is his first name, but $400 an hour is about right.
You know, I'm still thinking about it. I thought about taking the grandkids down and letting them go for a ride in it. The guy's pretty good, and he's level-headed, and I don't think he'd scare them too bad. But that'd be a real hoot. Now, I've flown in a paragliders two times, maybe three times, and, oh, man, that's a hoot. Nowadays, they make you get a sport pilot license before you can have one, but, you know, before they did that up there in Columbus, Kansas, they had a dealer that manufactured them there, and there was one meet they had down there. Of course, everything's flat out in that area, as you well know. And that's in southeast Kansas. And the object of that meet was to get 200 of those in the air all at once. Well, I think they only managed to get 137 up there. That's quite a sight with all of those colors of those things, Jim. But they're like riding in a rocking chair. They're really great fun.
The only time I was doing something like that in the military was going through pilot training there, and they tied a rope behind us, or had us tied onto a Jeep with a parachute hanging behind us and pull us up in the air high enough to be able to let us drop and see if we could do a parachute landing fall. And I decided right then and there that's one is all I need to do.
Brings back old memories. When we were going through parachute training, you went over to this pool. I can't remember, that San Diego, or I think it was in San Diego. Anyways, they put a parachute harness on you. And then you'd hold your arms straight out and you'd close your eyes. And down at the other opposite end of that Olympic-sized pool, they had a winch tied to that cable that they hooked to your parachute harness in the front. And then you close your eyes and they would jerk you off into the water and drag you all the way to the other end of the pool. Well, all you had to do was rotate off and then be sure to take off top one first, and then you did the bottom one, I believe. I can't remember now. But inevitably, I mean, after you was instructed, somebody would do it the opposite way. And, you know, they'd drag that sucker all the way to the end of the other pool, and he'd be spitting water. But inevitably, somebody grabbed the wrong one to get out of the harness. It was to simulate the wind dragging you across the water.
Oh, yeah, I've done that many times. And then get you underneath the parachute that's on the water, and now you got to grab a seam and pull it towards you. I've done that on many occasions because we had to do life support training like every 17 months or something like that.
Those poopy suits, if the air temperature and the water temperature was such and such, I don't know, they just tell you to put them on. Oh, those things, I hated them. They were hot, and they were heavy, and when you did deep water survival training, they'd drop you off the back of the ship, and inevitably, those things were one size, extra, extra large, it seemed like, especially since I was a scrawny guy anyways, and legs would fill up with air and practically drown you trying to get your head up above the water. And then the helicopter would come over and pick you up, and you had to get out of the parachute and get away from it before the helicopter would pick you up. And then inevitably, they tell you, don't touch that hook till it comes down and hits the water and the static's eliminated, and then you grab it. And inevitably, somebody tried to grab that sucker without letting it touch the water first, and it just knocked the snot out of them.
We had the same cautions. I've dragged some A-10 pilots across the water, and they flew so slowly. All those guys had to be in the poopy suits, and we didn't. But we would take them about midway across the Atlantic, and then another group of tankers coming from Europe would come out and rendezvous with us, and they would take them the rest of the way, and we'd accelerate on out and go on back because the duty times or the flight times were getting really long for us hauling those guys. But I used to feel sorry for those A-10 pilots that were in the poopy suits because they'd been there, you figure, at least an hour and a half before takeoff, and then this long, long, slow drag across the water. And back then, the A-10 didn't have an autopilot.
I wouldn't have thought that. The worst thing I ever done, and I shouldn't admit this, it was stupid, but I was young. Normally, I'd fly aboard. Well, this time, some chief wanted to fly in my place, and you know how that went. I lost that battle. And so it was a lot easier if you flew aboard than taking a bus up to Alameda. What's the name of that town up there, Bernice? I had the big breakwater on it. Anyways, it was where the ship went in. The Queen Mary was right next to us. Got a brain block here. Anyways, I went up on the bus, and I'd never been aboard ship before. It was the first time, and I had that poopy suit with me and my sea bag and that. So down at the end of the gangway, I just laid it down, went aboard, and got my berth, come back out, and somebody stole the poopy suit. Long Beach.
I think we used to have them on the tanker, but they stopped it before my generation of guys got in there. It was just stuff that was unnecessary, and they used to have to wear parachutes when we did air refueling too, but that all stopped before I got in the cockpit.
They were a pain, and they were hot, they were heavy and thick. I remember they was orange on the outside and black on the inside, but at any rate, I really got to talking to about that, because those things, I imagine, were pretty expensive. And it was cool weather at the time, and I was due to fly, of course. And luckily, the water temperature never got such that we had to don them, or they wouldn't have let me flown, I'm sure. But I felt like an idiot. I just thought, it's a Navy Yard. Nobody will steal anything here. Young and dumb.
The old Navy saying, gear adrift is a gift.
But somebody sure had.
I think that was a Marine Corps saying.
More like it, jarhead. shoot. Jim, I got a couple of texts here, and I was looking up a call sign, and I really enjoyed visiting with you. And I think today, the rest of the schedule, when my eyes get back to normal, I think I'll go out and see if there are any eggs out there. We haven't been getting a lot, but getting a few. And they're well-fed and watered, so I shouldn't have to do that. You be careful out there tomorrow morning. They're forecasting a possibility in the northern Greenville and Spartanburg County having some ice. And we can do without that. Right now, it's 46 degrees, 44%. 11-mile-an-hour peak out of the southeast and 3016.
Well, good enough. I'll see if I can dive into this Yaesu menu here and try to figure out how to get rid of this Roger menu, turn that thing off. But I'll be clear on your last and KO4 LAO, clear and listening.
Well, the pleasure's all mine, as usual. And I'm just thankful we got a sunshiny day. Those old rainy, gloomy days, it makes it even harder on us retired people to get outside. 73 is Jim. KO4 LAO. This is N0TR.
Goodbye, Tom. KB4CBA. Jim, you still in there? KO4 LAO. KB4CBA.
KO4 LAO.
David, I was just listening to you off QSO and caught the tail end of it anyway. And so how you doing today?
Not bad. I'm headed up to the recycling center here to go get rid of some cardboard boxes.
I'll tell you, I'm there and done that. More times than I can count. We cleaned out a storage building that we had for about, we rented for about 12, 15 years, and 10 by 10, it was stacked to the ceiling with junk. I took most of it to the dump, everything but my toolbox.
Well, I'm, ordering all this stuff online that you're doing. I don't hardly go anywhere anymore, and you just accumulate cardboard boxes like crazy.
I've got to stack them out there. I'll take my pocket knife and cut them into pieces that'll fit in the trash can, and then sometimes I have to do the human compacting thing. Got me a little two-step ladder, and I climb up in the garbage can and just jump up and down in it and compact everything.
not sure my garbage cans would allow me to do that, but I think I'd, that would be a great way to for me to get to the emergency room.
A lot of fun. Oh, me, I tell you. But they'll, if I stack the cardboard up, they'll, beside the garbage can, they'll take it. And, you know, if I can't get it in the garbage can, I'll just stack it up and nice and neat beside it. And it's gone the next morning. They pick up about 5:30 in the morning.
That guy was pretty early this morning, too. He was right at about 7 o'clock, maybe just a little bit before.
I heard you and Tom talking about flying. Are you still doing any flying?
I do primarily. I fly for fun. You know, I'll go get an instructor to go with me and see if I can still remember how to land an airplane and those kind of things, fun things. But I'll also do aerial drone stuff, and I write curriculum for aerial drones, teaching people how to do that kind of stuff. So kind of like some of the same interests Dave WDJ or W4DJW. I think he's one of the guys that's big into RC and rotorcraft as well.
I've known Dave since high school. We used to work at the, they used to be where the Starbucks is there on East North, right before you get to 291. There used to be a Hess station there. And we were a full service station as far as, you know, we didn't do any repair work, but we, You got full service front and rear windshields cleaned, all the fluids checked, under the hood and topped off, even the battery. And of course, this has been a few years ago. But anyway, we were pumping gas around. I don't know, it was probably in the low 30s a gallon. I don't actually remember what the price was.
I remember the full service stations, and, you know, I didn't see that again until when I was later in service. I went up to New Jersey, and if I remember correctly, it was illegal for you to pump your own gas in that state.
Well, I mean, I guess they could. You know, they didn't want the liability, but I haven't heard of anybody setting themselves on fire or anything. and you know, especially it just takes one little spark of static to ignite those fumes. And heck, I've seen people smoke and pump gas.
Yeah, I think it was a jobs program more than anything else. I was in service. I happened to be doing some temporary duty at the one of the bases in New Jersey there. And I went out to go fill up my truck or the rental vehicle that I was. And the guy said, "Oh, wait a minute, you can't do that." And I said, "What do you mean I can't do that?" But it was a state law.
Well, I'll tell you. We had a, you know, we had that gas shortage. I think it was in the 70s. I think it was 74, somewhere around in there. And there was a station on the corner of 291 and East North. It's now, I don't know, it's a little strip mall there now. And he was price gouging. And whoever is in charge of that, they made him give away so many gallons of free gas, and you should have seen the cars lined up. It was a total mess in every direction, and that's a big intersection. They say that that's the most deadly intersection in Greenville. Of course, it was only
291 was only four lane then. It wasn't six like it is now. Yeah, I remember that shortage very well because I was in high school at the time, and depending on when your license tag number, whether it ended in an odd or an even number, was the day that you could go get gas. And I used to sweat out having to go trying to get gas in the morning before school, you know, and make it to school on time. Well, that was something I never had the privilege of doing. My parents, they had two cars, and my dad was the only one that worked, but my stepmother wouldn't let us drive her car to school. So I can say I never have driven to high school, and now they did give me a car. They gave me an old 63 Chevrolet with 80-something thousand miles on it, and I drove to Mars Hill with that, and my sophomore year in college, so my sophomore and junior year there. But that was more of a case of a have to there.
I used to teach up in Hendersonville, and after I retired from the military, I went up there and taught, and we had several teachers on the staff there that were from Mars Hill.
Okay. I was a music major, music ed major, but I never did finish and got married, and I finished my undergrad. I did everything online with Liberty University. Finished my undergrad in 2003 and my master's in 2006. And but anyway, I finally got there.
Hey, David. Hey, I was just listening to the radio. Did y'all hear where Rush Limbaugh died?
Sir, I had not heard that. KB4CBA. And Jim's in here, too. Jim, I forget your call. You'll have to throw it out there.
KL4LAO, and yes, it's a sad day.
I wonder who they'll bring in to replace him, or if they'll just shut it down.
I doubt they'll shut it down. I think they'll have somebody take it over. There's no telling who that might be, but it's something that was, it's quite a legacy there. I was in California when he first started out there in the late 80s, I guess it was, and would listen to him when he was just a local guy.
Yeah, he was good in Sacramento. And did you ever see him on late night television?
On one or two occasions, I just know that when I was at in Atwater Station in Atwater, California, all around the base at lunchtime, that's the only thing you heard was Rush Limbaugh playing on everybody's radio at lunchtime.
Well, right there in itself is his legacy. He had a major, major following. Well, listen, I'll let you guys get back at it. I'm going to stop in a drive-through window and get me something to eat, what the truckers call choke and puke. I'll see you guys later. David, give me a call later on. We're going to fly this weekend. KN4BWA, I'm clear.
Chief, I will give you a call. What would you like for me to call you?
Hope it isn't anytime soon, but one someday, I just hope somebody will stand over my grave and say, he was a good man. Later, guys.
W4CBA.
Well, 73 as well, KO4LAO.
Jim, well, I got a leaky faucet, and I'm still battling with, and it's winning. Bought a new cartridge for it,
and boy, they weren't giving it away. And it leaked, so I'm going to, I took the old one apart and found some, a little bit of mud in there, and I cleaned it out, put it back together, and it quit leaking for 4 days, and then it started back. Took it apart again, same thing, so I'm not sure what's going on. Anyway, I got to figure this one out. We're having our main bathroom redone. It's gutted right now, and they just put the tile up for the shower today. So, and the floor. So they're starting to build it back, but it's still going to be probably another week or so.
It could be that it's just cold weather, and maybe those seals are not seating right because of the cold weather.
Well, yeah, the guy that is over the project said that, of course, he's a licensed plumber, electrician, all that, but and he's been doing this for years, and he even looked at it, and he put some new springs in the back of it, and seals, and he said he could put some kind of plumber's grease, I think he called it, and that might help it seal up. But I'm the cartridge comes apart, and I'm thinking I'm gonna try to put the back part of the new one onto the front part of the old one. and see if that stops the leak. And if that doesn't work, then I'm just going to let him fix it. It's
supposed to get a little chillier this weekend, if I heard Tom correctly earlier.
Can I do it right now? I'm going to get off the radio here and get to it. Yeah, I'm playing tennis tonight, well, at 5 and 6:30. I got 3 hours of tennis tonight, so looking forward to it.
Well, I hope you're doing all that indoors, because it's going to be a little chilly outside.
It'll be outside. It'll be about 45 degrees when we start, and I'll have several layers on. So I'll be warm. And you know, once you get moving around out there, it's not bad.
Good luck to you, and stay warm. I'll be clear on your last 73 to you, KO4LL.
Well, you have a good one, and good to talk with you, as always. And 73s, and enjoy the rest of this beautiful day. It's good to see the sunshine. And I'll clear out here for your final KB4CBA.
KO4LAO, clear.
4LAO in 0TR. LAO in 0TR. 0TR, clear. LEO in 0TR. 0TR.
W0TR, W0TR, 87LT, you listening, Tom?
7LT, this is N0TR, you was close.
Roger, earlier I thought I'd give you a shout and say good afternoon.
I don't know where you're located right now. I was trying to read my phone and talk at the same time, and my daughter says men don't multi-purpose good, but I was getting a lot of, shall we say, ignition noise on the last transmission.
This is a dual-band rig, and that was some static burst coming out off of the 465 machine. not sure what it was, but I just muted it. Sorry about that. Yeah, N0TR87LT. Name's Dan. You're like me. I can never remember names, especially when I'm not anticipating talking to somebody that just pops in there. I don't know what it is. There's actually a medical term for that. It's called anomia, where the name is absent. Hope you're having a fine day today. Boy, it's a beauty. Apparently, it's not going to be tomorrow. We live over toward the Green Valley Golf Club, and today was the first day I've seen any golfing activity in over a week, I'd say. And people are hustling around, I think, trying to, you know, all of the people that are in golf withdrawal are trying to hustle around and get at least one round in before the freezing rain hits. Go ahead.